Nathan Bolyan.
Longer than day to day. We won't bring him on the trip. It's going to be at least 7 to 10 days before I think we look at putting him back on the ice.
Have you made your determination? Can you tell us which guy goes in?
Oh, no, we won't. We would never tell you. Sorry. We'll get there, make sure nobody gets the flu, and, you know, it's too early to make that decision, but I got a pretty good idea where we're going.
Do you have any update on Brian Little, Paul?
Yeah, you know what? So he's still in that healing phase. So before it's even, we've talked about the protocol, and they need to let his eardrum heal. And then once that happens, they'll kind of make assess if they need to, what the next phase is. So this is, he's feeling better, I'll tell you that. The dizziness has come down. Like, he is making progress, but it's just going to take some time for everything heals inside, and then he can decide where he needs to go with it. And he's been at the rink, so that would be the other thing. I mean, he was there yesterday, and just kind of light. He is on the bike. Very light bike rides.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Anthony Vitando is a guy that's sort of spent his career kind of going in and out of a lineup, and yet he's always sort of kept a great attitude. I mean, did you know much about him? Is that one of the reasons that you guys were high on bringing him in? And has he lived up to that expectation?
It would have exceeded the expectations, because you're always, you know, in a new environment, you never know how a player is going to respond. But we got some really good feedback before we acquired him, and then even better after, from players, coaches that I know that have coached him. And he is exactly as advertised. He works so hard in practice, and then after, to stay ready, all the other players have a tremendous amount of respect. That he's kind of like the on-ice version of Al Pritchard. He's connected to everybody, and that includes the coaches, right? He's an old enough man that he can have a conversation with you. So you're always pulling for him. He handled being out, especially in that circumstances. His 3 or 4 games leading to me taking him out of the lineup were as good as I'd seen him play. So we were really happy with where he was at, but he's been great.
The whole, you know, he's good in the room kind of thing. Sometimes we hear it a lot, and sometimes it's easy to kind of discount that.
Correct.
But in this case, I mean, in your career, he's one of these defining guys that is just really, you know.
He has that Matt Hendricks effect, different personality. But let's, and I don't want to overblow this, because there's a lot more going on in the room. Look at how hard our team's playing right now, and you can tell. By being around our locker room, there's a lot of respect in there, but they're having fun, and our compete level's real high. So those are the two tells, right? Are they working as hard as they can, and how do they move around each other, whether they get along? Anthony's a big part of that. So when you say a guy's really good in the room, there's a real value to that, because you can get a bunch of guys who don't like each other, and you can win with them, certainly. But in the grind and the adversity that you face in the NHL, especially with the young team, how they feel about each other, and having guys always kind of picking you up on the bench, and if they got down one, Tony's hanging over the board screaming at the forwards to stay in the fight, stay in the fight. And that's kind of been who we've become. So those players, Bork and all the players that we brought in this year, those kind of men.
Last one, too. So all those things that you just identified your team to characterize your team, those are the characteristics of a good road team. Does that go hand in hand? Is that why you're 8-4?
Good road teams and one goal game teams. That's why I'm standing behind the bench is more fun right now than the score might tell you, or the stats might tell you. So I've been behind the bench at times when your numbers are all real good, you're winning, but you don't like your game. And usually that's, you don't feel the connection between the players and the energy. I'm standing behind the bench, and we've had some ugly stretches in games, and they're all tight games, but the bench is right. They're playing for each other. So that makes for I don't know if you're allowed to say it in the NHL, but it's fun. And no, we're not 20 games over 500. I know that San Jose is going to be, if it's anything like our last game, it's going to be all we can handle in there, but I'm looking forward to it.
That game, I don't know if you want to call it a bit of a house of horrors in terms of the amount of shots that came on, but I mean, how would you...
We're really hoping that's a one-off, yeah.
Right, but is there anything different when you go into a game that wouldn't you've come out of a game like that, and then you go back and...
You certainly have their attention, because all the players will remember it. We really excelled at what we would call our low three. Our two defensemen, our low four, did a marvelous job boxing out, and they had to, because the puck was there the last two periods. So we'll have their attention, and certainly a tremendous amount of respect for that team. They're on much like Dallas, right? We're hitting a bunch of these teams then that are on really strong runs.
The Blake Wheeler line, if you look at all the metrics and all that, it's very good. And then if you look at the Scheife line, it maybe not be as good. Is that just a byproduct of, like, the line, you know, with Pro or not with, yeah, with, yeah, you know, having Pro on that line and then having Jack and them, they're all seem to be playing one way.
Right.
But is the Scheife line just not... It's just not enough defense on that line.
Scheife line's playing against the other team's best, right? They're drawing the heavy cover. So the other lines get to operate under that protection, if you will. The Scheife line's growing, right? He's just, even Mark is a young man. But two really young wingers, and they're playing now against a different... The line is, right? So Kyle kind of got there by default a couple of years ago and was really good with Blake for a while, but... I'm willing to let that line, I don't want to say struggle is the right word, find its own way. When Ehlers and Roslovic skate the way they did the last game, that's a dynamic line, right? Blake was really good, really sharp. The Lowry line, I just don't want to break up. Like, that combination of Kopp Lowry changes how I run the bench. It changes the matchup game, all of those things. So we're going to live with Mark and Patrick and Kyle having the night where they get 3 points. And then there's going to be a night where they don't get a whole lot, and maybe they spend a little bit more time in their own end with the idea of where will you be a month or two from now. Because the door is not closed for Blake Wheeler, the door is still open that Blake Wheeler stays at center. But that's a possibility down the road, and then you change the other pieces around him because he's a big, strong, physical man, and with our defense, you know, learning on the goal, they're competing real hard. Having a big man in the middle of the ice has been very, very good for us. All three of those centermen, and Gustafson as well, is a good size for a 19-year-old. A lot of our defensive metrics are actually better than they were last year, and some of that is the size we now have in the middle of the ice.
What have you liked about Blake this time? What's changed from 2 years ago to now? And I assume last time he would have been playing against the other team.
Yeah, like duration and those two. Like, I think it was Kyle Connor and Patrick a fair amount of that time. I mean, they were really, really young, and they were coming out in the three hole. I was hiding them a little bit more. And I think it was about a 13-game block, and it was also Mark Scheifele coming back into the lineup, a guy that was definitely going back into the center ice position. That would be the difference. And based on, and I don't have any more information on that, but we can only assume now that this is long-term for Brian Little, so it's more than 2 or 3 weeks. So if this, and we're, you know what, we're like, nothing is permanent. I've said it a couple hundred times. We're happy today, and in 2 weeks, you know, all your great plans get changed.
Paul, by everything I've ever heard, you foster really good positive relationships with your players. I'm sure somewhere along the line there's been ones that you didn't get along with.
Yeah.
Based on this Mike Babcock situation, if you've ever been in a situation like that where you're fired to keep things from kind of blowing up the way they have, are there things you can do, like reach out to players that you may have had troubles with once you've left, or is the door kind of closed once you go out that door?
If you go back over any person's career, there's going to be relationships that didn't go well. When you're constantly pushing to a threshold to get the most out of players in an intense environment, you're going to have situations where the players feel that they should have been handled differently or they didn't like it. You do the best you can. I think there is a real awareness over the last year or two, certainly on our staff, and if I'm gonna give anybody credit, I will give the assistant coaches credit for kind of pushing me to evolve to be more understanding, maybe, of young players, more caring, possibly. There'll be a whole bunch of guys say I haven't hit that threshold yet, but I'm fortunate, and I mean. You guys won't get the player right, but Blake Wheeler grabs me about a year and a half ago and says, just be nice to the guy. And I got a list of about 14 reasons why I shouldn't be, right, because of his play. But that stuck with me, right? And so the game has changed. And the players, especially, we have such a young group. Those interactions have to change. When I first started, you would handle a man a whole lot differently than you're handling a player now. That being said, I got a list, I'm sure. There's a list. Every coach has one. The guys that didn't like the way you talked to them, didn't like the decisions you met out. I've sat captains out. I've sat Hall of Fame players out in playoffs. So you're going to have players that don't love you. That just goes with the job.
So I'm hearing you say, like, you've evolved as a coach to handle
I'm
the
trying
players.
To. I'm not saying I'm trying to.
Yeah.
We have a young group here, and I don't stand in front of the room. the same way I did 5 years ago. I'm not sure I'm doing it the same way I did 2 months ago, right? Your game change, you have to evolve. You have to grow. And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm also not saying that's not what Mike did. Nobody knows, right? When you're trying to push a young team, when you think about a coach that took a team that drafted first overall and 4 years later may have gotten fired because of his own success, turned him into a Stanley Cup contender in everybody's mind, you're pushing hard every day. A young team. So eventually there's going to be some feathers ruffled.
So in the evolution of the game, is it something based on what's happened media-wise in this situation, maybe even with Bill Peters today, that there needs to be a recognition that it almost seems like, I don't know if this is true or not, but there was a code back in the day where you left the room and you didn't talk about this kind of stuff. Now it looks like maybe the media situation is evolving where we do talk about these things. Is that something you think going forward coaches need to be cognizant of?
I'm not trying to be funny. That's a really, really good question. But I'm just going to kind of go in and do what I think is right, and then I'll answer for my decisions after.